Now, Fred, before we get in too deep, a quick word for our listeners here in Denver. We're kicking off our August Real Science Radio fundraising campaign a little early, producing this program every week, keeping RSR on the radio here in Denver, and continuing to grow our video outreach on YouTube. It takes significant resources, and this August we're asking our listeners to help. Our goal is to raise $20,000, so if Real Science Radio has been a blessing to you, please consider supporting us. You can learn more and even give at rsr.org. People say, Fred, the tradition is a diamond is forever. But according to this book, and a mountain of growing empirical scientific evidence, maybe forever isn't quite as long as advertised.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Fred, today we're going to talk about our newest Real Science Radio teaching series book, The List of Not-So-Old Things. Evidence that challenges deep time and points back to Genesis. And Fred, longtime listeners, which I'm one, they're going to recognize that title. Because this book didn't just begin with you and me sitting down and thinking, hey, let's think up a clever title for a book. And it didn't evolve naturalistically. It didn't assemble itself. This goes all the way back to Bob Enyart. Bob loved lists. And if you go to the website, you'll see Real Science Radio has a lot of lists and gathered a bunch of them over the years. And one of the major ones that Bob developed was the list of not so old things.
Yeah, that's right. So you can go to rsr.org/lists, and that's going to be at the top of the list. You know, the first list show we did.
That's right.
And I remember when he first brought it up, he was so excited about doing a list show. And I thought, you know, this is a really good idea. It keeps people engaged. And I had the privilege of, you know, brainstorming with Bob through the years. But, you know, honestly, he did all the heavy lifting. I mean, he built the list and he expanded it. He was constantly updating the website whenever something came up. And he just added to the discoveries over the years. So I really felt it was a good idea for Real Science Radio to produce a book on the list of not so old things, and just get this list in the people's hands who likes that kind of medium, you know, for reading. Bob had so many great ideas that we'd continually add to the list, but even since he's passed, though, we've added even more. So this is an updated list of, there's so many new discoveries we have that are included in this book. And so really looking forward to going through it.
Yeah. And not only new things, but even new evidence about old things that Bob had already established weren't so old. And one of the things I love about this project is this isn't just a list of things that people found on the internet last Tuesday. It's the history of Real Science Radio. The list is probably where Real Science Radio first became the kernel of an idea in Bob's mind. And the title itself is pure Bob. Bob was always methodically collecting and compiling evidence, and he'd always notice when the facts didn't fit the prevailing story, so to speak, and he'd say, wait a minute, that's not so old. Put that on the list. That's my Bob Enyart. That's my best Bob Enyart impression, although I can't really pull off the New Jersey accent, but that's the way he would say it.
Well, you know, we'll have to get AI to help us at some point. I mean, we'll do a Bob AI.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. And, you know, and Doug, to me, this book is maybe the most important that we do, because, you know, when you talk about like evolution, how evolution has taken over the schools and everything. And it's been really bad. Evolution is terrible. It's just, you know, what it's done to society is really bad. But when you debate somebody about evolution, what I found through the years is they almost have a tick. Like they know it's so stupid that they just, the argument usually goes, you know, that they pretty much don't even argue that much. They'll just fade away, or they'll try to change the subject. They'll try to attack the Bible itself. But when it comes to the age of the earth, it's so abstract that they feel a lot more confident with it. And I think, you know, the whole thing about millions of years and, you know, the earth being, your man coming into existence after so many millions of years, all of that stuff really goes against the first chapter of the Bible, Genesis. And so when if you read Genesis and you know that it's written as history and the way it's written, and then you're told that the earth is millions of years old and you've had death and disease and suffering for millions upon millions of years, why believe the rest of what's in the Bible? And so that's why I think this book is really important, because we got to, I think, equip more Christians with being able to defend Genesis. I was listening to a YouTube video of Cliff Nechte, I think is how you say his name, and he's great. He goes on college campuses. He's this older guy. He gets lots of views on his video, and he debates other secular college kids, does a really good job overall, but he's very weak when it comes to the age of the earth. And it's just, man, when he starts talking about, like a student might ask him about millions of years, and he'll give just such the worst answer possible, in my opinion. In fact, we'll do a future show on that. We'll show some clips where he tries to defend the Bible against that attack, and he doesn't do a good job, in my opinion. He does a great job with 90% of the rest of the stuff, but if we can't defend Genesis, then what are we left with? And so that's why we think this book is probably going to be the most important of our continuing Real Science Radio book series. We've got more in store for the audience.
Yeah. And so, Fred, there's nothing better in an argument or a presentation or just establishing your credibility than being able to answer one or two questions with absolute confidence, or to present one or two facts that no one in the room can argue with. I'm a salesman. I barely graduated high school. And a lot of times I have to sell things to doctors who went to medical school. Some of them are PhDs. And so why should they listen to me? Well, one of the things I've been able to do, and a lot of it is thanks to Real Science Radio, by the way, is to say a couple things very early on in my presentation and in my introduction that makes the doctors believe that I must know what I'm talking about. And because they're true, they're factual, and a lot of times they confirm what the doctors already know. And so if you can go in and do that, then you put yourself in a position to present the rest of your material effectively. And in my business, it's close the sale. Obviously, we don't close the sale on saving anyone's soul from hell, but we can give them confidence that that nagging suspicion they've had for their whole life that God is real and maybe they should pay attention to the Bible. Well, we can help them at least get over that hump. And Fred, the book is really about attacking the deep time story as it's presented, as though it's obvious the universe is billions of years old, the earth is billions of years old, dinosaurs 65 million years, everybody knows, the museum says it, the textbooks all say it, the guy with the British accents on television says it's true. So, and they especially say that to children. And the case is presented to children and adults alike as if it's closed. But Bob had this offensive habit, and I mean that with as the highest compliment, an offensive habit of just asking where the evidence actually leads. And once you start collecting these things, one after another, the interesting thing is, Fred, it's not just one item that's interesting. It's the overall pattern screaming to everyone clearly that the whole idea the scientists, alleged scientists, have been foisting on us about all these, this deep time and millions and billions of years, it's weak, it's even fake, it's phony, and the evidence for a young Earth is, well, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, And that's the point. You know, there's the list just got really big. And so we put it into this book, and here's the book right here. And, you know, it's pretty, there's like 15 chapters. Things are broken down in each chapter. There's a lot of different things for each type of thing that's not so old. And I thought it was important that we start with what I thought was the king of all not so old things. And that's what you just referenced earlier, dinosaurs. So dinosaur soft tissue. Okay, so we've got this paleontological discovery of a lifetime. I mean, let's face it, what greater discovery have we made in paleontology? So that's why this one needs to start out. I know we've talked a lot about it on this show, but we're the book, I thought, okay, let's right out of the gate, let's get to the biggest one of all. And so, you know, for generations, the public was taught this very simple story that dinosaurs lived tens or hundreds of millions of years ago. They died, they were buried, the bones fossilized, and, you know, their original biology would therefore be gone. And then along comes Dr. Mary Schweitzer, and she examined this T-Rex femur, and they demineralize portions of that bone, and they encounter flexible structures, vessel-like material, cellular-looking structures, proteins, and collagen, Doug. So biological material is being recovered from dinosaur remains that are assigned these tens and millions of years. And, you know, we just talked to Joel Brown and Logan, who's going to produce a video on this. We're really on the cusp of getting DNA out of some of these unfossilized dinosaur bones. So this is a discovery that has shocked the secular community at their very core.
Yeah. And Fred, the shock and the surprise, that in and of itself should tell you something. Because if you predicted that something shouldn't be there, and then you find it, you call yourself a scientist, well, you don't just get to say, well, of course, we knew that was always there. We've always suspected dinosaur blood might, could, maybe, possibly last 70 million years. Sure, we always, Fred, how do they get away with this? Anyway, one of my favorite parts of the story is the reaction. Schweitzer herself, right? She initially had trouble believing what she was seeing, and Discover magazine famously called it a dangerous discovery. You remember that, Fred?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
right.
Dangerous, like somebody was going to get hurt, you know, like the T-Rex was going to climb out of the lab and bite somebody.
Yeah, it said it raced a line from present to past. So there was almost a candid admission in the little subtitle of that article. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the danger, right? It was the danger was to their fake, phony, fake, made-up 65-million-year-old paradigm. That was the danger. Because suddenly their neat little barrier separating the present from the unimaginably distant past, it all became not so neat, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I remember one of the parts of that article, she mentioned some guy, and I think it was some professor from Kansas State. He said, I don't believe it. I refuse to believe it. And she asked him, well, what evidence would it take for you to believe it? And says, none. There's no evidence that would make me believe, you know, dinosaurs, soft tissue is discovered. Now, it's everywhere. I mean, Harvard, Stanford, all these big institutions are on board. They recognize that this is biological soft tissue. And we get into their attempts at explanations like iron preservation, you know, unusual burial conditions. Different things, mineral coatings, all these, and chemical mechanisms, Doug, they're trying desperately to explain this, and you just can't, especially, you know, now that we're finding DNA, kind of, we know that that's coming because we have inside baseball information.
Uh-huh.
DNA is a very fragile substance, so they're not going to be able to so easily explain that away. And, you know, my daughter, she got in a debate with somebody who was tutoring her on computer science when she was a freshman. They can take, I guess, these tutor classes or something. And the whole thing came up about dinosaur soft tissue. And he's like, that's not true. It's not true at all. That's all. You got that from some fake science. And Abby's like, no, here's a list. So she showed this guy Bob's list. And you can get that list, by the way, just go to rsr.org/dino. And it's a list of all the scientific discoveries from peer-reviewed journals, secular journals of
That's
the different.
That's right. Peer-reviewed. Some of them even speak with an English accent. some of the authors that are peer reviewed there. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, Bob maintained that list. And, you know, after he passed, Dr. Brian Thomas of ICR, now he continues to maintain the list by adding all the discoveries that are coming in of biological soft tissue.
Yeah.
From dinosaur bones. So, oh, and then Doug, do you remember the whole Jack Horner thing?
Do I remember it? I was part of the team. So I was raising the money and even donating a little bit of the money. Tell us, Fred.
Yeah, and Doug, so that was just before my time, before I came on the radio with Bob, that he did this thing where he offered Jack Horner $23,000 to carbon date that T-Rex bone that Mary Schweitzer had been examining. And he had no interest in doing that because he knows what was going to happen. They're going to find carbon-14 in it. And if you find carbon-14, that means the dinosaur bone can't be more than, say, 50-some-odd thousand years, because carbon-14 dating only goes back that far. If you find carbon-14 in it, it has to be younger than that. So, you know, basically, right. Horner apparently asked Mary about it. I'm sure he did. Yeah, wink, wink. But the test never happened.
The test never happened. And Bob had the money in hand, and maybe to a college professor in a big university like Montana State, you know, they're a powerhouse in the, what are they, in the Big Ten, or I forget. It's a big school. Anyway,
the small 32.
So, and back then, $23,000 was real money back then. I mean, that could put a kid through college at Montana State or Montana U or whatever, wherever he is. But he didn't take the money, and they didn't run the test, which that should tell you something about the whole story, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, anyways, you know, at Real Science, we're like, hey, run the test, but they wouldn't do it. And, you know, we're not afraid of science. And I like what Joel Brown of Sierra said. You know, as it turns out, all scientists are creation scientists. You know, many of them don't know it.
That's right.
But, oh, man. And so in the book, we get into more details on this whole dinosaur soft tissue thing. There's recent work by Mark Armitage, and then there's this whole thing with osteocytes and how their signatures in these, when they look at these things, like the creature died of drowning. I wonder what, does that ring any bells, Doug?
And there's so much coming on this, Fred, that'll probably be the foundation of the second edition of the list of not so old things, which is already in the works, because the data and the evidence keeps building. It keeps being discovered day by day. It's only going to get bigger. Well, there'll be a second edition. It's already in the works. They're working on it over there at ICR and CRS and all the other places. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we thought it made sense to start with this whole thing on dinosaur soft tissue. And then the next chapter we get into, Doug, and we've talked about this many times on Real Science Radio, is diamonds and carbon 14.
Yes. We just mentioned carbon 14 and the fact that Jack Horner has some aversion to carbon 14 that we weren't aware of. We uncovered an unknown allergic reaction, apparently, that he has to carbon-14. It's the only one ever recorded, but it could be contagious. So if you're around Jack, be careful. But so, Fred, dinosaurs are one thing. But, yeah, we don't want to ruin diamonds for everybody, but we want to tell the truth because, you know, people say, Fred, the tradition is a diamond is forever. But according to this book, and a mountain of growing empirical scientific evidence, maybe forever isn't quite as long as advertised.
Yeah. Every time I'm at the diamond store, you know, maybe it's an anniversary or whatever, you know, something for Sandy, I'm going to hear that story about, well, you can buy this manufactured diamond and pay a lot less, or you can get the millions of years old diamond, you know, and that just lures people in. Too bad they've got me as a person they're trying to sell to, because then I'll tell them, well, you know, they find carbon 14 in these diamonds, so they're not millions of years old anyways. Did you know that? No, I've never heard that before.
Fred, that's a perfect example of what I just said about the salesman trying to establish himself as a as an authority. He comes in and he gives the millions of years story, and the average civilian who just walked in off the street and went to the public school, they start thinking, wow, this guy really knows what he's talking about. I remember hearing about that in science class. This guy's really smart. Let me give him $25,000 for this rock. Anyway, go ahead, Fred.
Yeah. You know, and they'll take these natural diamonds, they'll put billions of years on them. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But here's the problem. So diamond's a really hard substance, and the book, you know, gets into this detail. And, you know, lots of nice images in the book, by the way. And by the way, you help us stay on the air by buying this book, our Jesus Light and Design book, and other materials at store.rsr.org.
That's right.
Also, Doug, now, we're doing this more on the radio, but even to our video listeners, we're doing a telethon. I know it's not quite August yet. It's going to be August really soon. August is our telethon month. Our goal is to raise $20,000 to help keep us on radio, but also just to help with all of our costs that we have. We don't have any paid staff, Doug. Doug, are you getting a salary?
Not getting a salary, Fred. I'm hoping to work my way up to that. It's one of my lifetime goals is to get a salary from Real Science Radio.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
and by the way, people don't know this, Fred. And so Fred is basically squandering the retirement money that he might have passed on to his children doing this show. And when I say squander, I'm totally joking. Fred is investing his retirement, a lot of it, into doing the show. So if you can help, if you think Fred's a decent salesman, if he's established himself as any type of authority with all the work he's put in to this show over the past 20 years, and I'm honored that you invited me to be on it after Bob went to be with the Lord and is looking down now, laughing at us for all the stuff we don't know. And anyway, we could use your help. We're not the greatest salesman in the world, so we're not able to... we're not able to guilt trip you into reaching for the credit card. But if you think the show is worthwhile, buy the book, number one. Buy a bunch of them and hand them around. Give them out on Christmas. Give them for birthdays. And help us out in any way you can. The telethon, we need the 20 grand to stay on the radio. Is it the radio, Fred?
Yeah, it's right? Radio and, you know, to help, you know, with video production.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's the radio, which for you kids out there, radio is a wave that's really, anyway, it's really interesting. If you want to look into it, there's amplitude modulated.
Yeah, we talk about that in Jesus Light and Design. Yeah, we talk about radio waves.
That's right. So you kids can find out about radio in our book, Jesus Light and Design. Definitely check that out. But anyway, I don't want to flog it too badly, Fred, but we want to find out if we're going to stay on the radio, because we might not be able to stay on the radio. That's all there is to it. I don't want to be too blunt about it, but if the radio can't pull its weight, then we'll have to cut bait. Hey, I'm a poet.
That's, I didn't know it. Yeah, so the radio is still important to us, but we really want to hear from our radio listeners especially, and let us know, and, you know, help us stay on the radio, because we do know there's plenty of you out there listening on radio. So we're at a juncture where we have to really make a critical decision if we're going to move forward with the radio. So please reach out to us. The best thing you can do is donate $100, $200, $500. All of that would go towards, you know, making sure that we can stay on the radio. There's a lot of, to me, there's still benefits of doing that. So
yes. And if you decide to, instead of passing on your retirement to your kids when you die, if you decide to give it to us, we will never take a salary. This will never be part of feathering our nest or building our retirement. It would only go to keeping Real Science Radio going for at least until we die. So,
yeah. And then anything we get beyond the radio expenses, we put towards our, you know, video producers and really promotions for our videos to reach more people on YouTube and just different avenues, you know, Instagram, TikTok, all of those things, and the ability to produce shorts. So yeah, everything helps. Really appreciate whatever you can do. So
that's right. And so if you do get in touch with us, let us know if you listen on the radio. We want to know if you're listening on KLTT. The 50,000-watt blowtorch. We need to know how many people are listening if you're listening.
KLTT.
KLTT.
Yep. That's KLTT AM 670. We're on at 12:30 p.m. every Friday and 3:30 p.m. every Saturday. The Friday show is rerun. So
that's all right. And so, now, wait, before we finish with diamonds, Fred, just real quick for anyone. So if you're thinking about who to give your money to when you die, you can give it to your kids and cause problems in their life and cause arguments between your kids and all that. Or you could give it to Real Science Radio, and then you can laugh while everybody wonders, well, how come Dad didn't put me in the will? He gave all the money to Real Science Radio. What's up with that? And then you can judge the character of your children from heaven by how they take that news that you actually gave the money to a ministry. Anyway, I'm only partially kidding. I want you to seriously consider that. That's I'd rather give my money rather than causing arguments in my family after I die, if I have any money left, which my goal is to not have any left. But if I did, I don't want to give it to my kids. People don't do well with money they didn't earn.
Yeah, so you're right about that.
I'd rather give it to a good ministry that I knew would use it wisely. All right, yes. Now, not buying diamonds, by the way. One of the things my wife remembers when she was a child was that her mother really liked diamonds, and her father always said, they're stupid, don't ever buy them. He said, buy gold. No, he said, buy gold or real estate. That was his advice to his 7-year-old daughter.
All right.
But diamonds.
So back to carbon-14 in diamonds.
Yes. And
so here's the problem. So carbon-14 has a relatively short half-life. So carbon-14 is decaying back into nitrogen. It's radioactive. And that half-life is about 5,700 years. So after enough of these half-lives, if something is really millions or billions of years old, measurable carbon-14 should essentially be gone. Yet we're still measuring carbon-14 in diamonds, Doug. And this is especially compelling because their tightly packed crystal structure makes ordinary outside carbon contamination harder to invoke than with many other minerals. So the whole carbon-14 contamination thing doesn't work with diamonds because we have too many examples from around the globe where they're very careful when they, you know, cut open these diamonds. There's no carbon-14 contamination and they're finding carbon-14. It's an incredibly powerful argument against the diamond being millions of years old. And we cover that in the book with a little bit more detail, some nice pictures that help illustrate what's going on with carbon-14.
Yes. And so even the contamination argument, oddly enough, Fred, the same thing was used against the dinosaur soft tissue. Oh, well, that's probably contamination or the iron preserved. There was iron in all of these. If you put the diamond in an Iron Maiden and you sealed it up and delivered it to the lab, and then we measured the carbon, then would you be happy? Iron Maiden, by the way, that was one of Bob's, I can't remember if he dubbed Mary Schweitzer the Iron Maiden for going along with the whole argument for a little while.
Yeah, but, I think he might have. I thought you were going to say that was Bob's favorite band.
Oh, well, yeah.
I kind of would doubt that, but hey, but you never know, you know?
I did not know this, Fred. Here's an interesting bit of trivia for the audience. The heavy metal band Iron Maiden actually penned a song that was against abortion back in the early 1980s.
Wow.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I'm not going to tell the title, but anyone who's into metal, just look it up. It's an interesting just tidbit that proves that you don't have to be a paragon of morality and Christianity to be against killing babies. I mean, even like a heavy metal guy is like, well, that's wrong.
And with Bob's stance against abortion, maybe he was an Iron Maiden fan. But
you never know.
Speaking of interesting, here's the interesting fact of the week. Are you ready?
Oh.
We've got to do our interesting fact of the week.
All right. I thought we had talked our way past that, Fred, but apparently no. You're going to get...
You can't quite escape it, Doug. So...
All right. And by the way, one of our listener, he listens on the radio and he watches on YouTube, by the way. He said that he suspects possibly that the interesting fact of the week is a setup. And I just want to vouch right now that it's not a setup. We don't go over the interesting fact of the week. How do I say it, Fred? I'm losing my mind.
Pre-scripted. We don't.
That's right.
You never. No, I want your genuine reaction.
So we don't go over it beforehand. See, you can tell we're not practicing this. I couldn't even think of the word beforehand.
I want the legitimate reaction by Doug when he gets it wrong and I push the red buzzer. Now, when I push the green one and you get it right, I mean, the look on your face is so exciting and so much joy.
Yes. All right. Let's do it, Fred.
Okay. Here's the interesting fact of the week. What major feature in the Grand Canyon represents more missing time, according to the conventional geological timescale, than the entire interval represented by most of the sedimentary layers above it? So what is called the missing time? And I'm asking that because next week, we're almost out of time. Next week, we're going to do part two of the Listen Nuts Old Things. We're going to talk about the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
So what a time to ask about this.
All right. Well, Fred, if we would have scripted that question, I would have definitely figured out a way for you to shorten that. Which layer represents more missing time?
What major feature in the Grand Canyon represents more missing time, according to the conventional geological time scale, than the entire interval represented by most of the sedimentary layers above it? There, I shortened it for you by reading it faster.
That's right, because
you got to dig up your old geology knowledge in the class that everybody gets an A in because they really don't study. They just kind of...
So let me try to clarify this for the audience, since I'm part of the audience and I don't understand. So the secular scientists admit that some of the features indicate there's missing time.
Yeah, and lots of it.
And that's not something that just us creationists say.
No. In fact, there's a recent March 2026 report on it from Columbia Lamont Dougherty report.
Yeah, and they look at that and they're like, boy, that's really strange. There's missing time. and the feature, the major feature that represents more missing time
is
than all the sedimentary layers below it, that indicates it's one of the layers. You've given me a clue right there in the question that it's one of the layers. He said as he looked at Fred to see if there was... I got nothing. All right.
It's called the Great Unconformity.
The Great Unconformity. I knew about that, Fred. I've heard about that on this show.
Yeah, well, see, you had to memorize it to get that A in geology, and then after that, you forget. It's roughly a billion years of missing geological record. And again, we get just recently the Columbia Lamont Dougherty report describes a great unconformity as a widespread gap where more than a billion years of Earth history can be absent. Mm-hmm. So, next week we'll actually get into the Grand Canyon a little bit and so much more on the list of not sold things. We wanted to do two shows on it because we knew that we couldn't get through one show, even just introducing the book, Doug.
Yes.
And by the way, you get there's lots of material in here. It's almost 260 pages, I think. So, I think people will enjoy this, and we're going to talk more about it next week. Yes. Go to store.rsr.org, and it's right there on the front page. Be sure to buy, if you can, multiple copies and hand some out, because we think this is our most important book that we're doing. Absolutely. And we'll talk more about it next week.
Yep,
and don't forget, we're running our telethon starting in August for Real Science Radio to try to keep us on radio. And there's a lot of advantages to radio, Doug. It's not just getting over the airwaves in both Colorado and, five surrounding states because it's such a powerful station. It's also just having scientists come on board who like the idea that they're also being heard on radio. Believe it or not, it's even a marketing thing. So there's a lot of advantages.
A good scientist who's worth his salt, he's been around for a little while, which means he's probably got a little gray in his hair, and he knows radio, and he thinks radio's big time, because radio is big time. It always was. Radio changed civilization. So anyway, as much as the internet, maybe not as fast and maybe not as detrimentally, but radio's big time. We'd love to stay on the radio. Let us know if you listen. Send us as much money as you possibly can to keep us on the air. And let's talk about not just a good unconformity, We're going to talk about a great unconformity next week.
Great unconformity. That's right, Doug. Okay, Doug, I'm looking forward to next week. We'll finish our review of the list of not-so-old things. So for my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.